It's the TED Radio Hour from NPR. I'm Guy Raz. And on the show today, ideas around privacy. Or what's left of it, anyway. And whether privacy is going to mean anything in the future. So there's a guy in Maryland. His name is Hassan Elahi. He's an artist. He teaches at a university. And you could say that Hassan doesn't have much privacy at all. And the end of his privacy began about a decade ago at Detroit Metro Airport.
So I had an exhibition in West Africa. So I was flying back. And, you know, I mean, as an artist, you go wherever there's work. So I'm flying back and I land in Detroit. And, you know, you're going through customs, the usual thing in immigration. And the guy, like, swipes the passport through and just, like, freezes. And I mean, like, completely white.
Hmm.
I'm thinking, okay, what's going on here?
And yeah.
He says, follow me, please. Walks me through, and I end up in a INS holding cell. And I'm sitting in this huge room, and, you know, like, there's all these people from every far corner of the earth. You know, you can see the fear in everyone's face. This is their first day in the U.S., and things aren't going well. And then literally, like, it's like a scene out of the movies. Like, this guy in a black suit walks straight up to me and just looks at me and says, I expect you to be older. Just bizarre, you know, the stuff. So I'm like, you mind explaining what's going on here? And he said something like, well, you got some explaining to do yourself.
The agent had all kinds of questions for Hassan, where he'd been, who he'd seen, who paid for the trip, but not just questions about that trip. The agent wanted to know details of where Hassan had been over the past 2 years.
Yeah, he's like, where were you on this day? Where were you on September 12th? Where are you on this date? So we read my calendar of appointments. You know, back then, it was my old Palm 505. So we read literally months and months and months.
This is at the airport. He's asking you where you were on specific dates.
Yeah, yeah. So it turns out that I had rented a storage unit in Tampa, Florida, where I was living at the time. So it's like, you know, what did you have in the storage unit? It's like, you know, winter clothes. I got, you know, like, furniture that I can't fit in my ratty apartment. I got, you know, assorted garage sale material. And he's like, okay, no explosives.
Okay, so it turns out Hassan was mistakenly put on an FBI watch list. And eventually, he got through that interrogation in Detroit. He picked up his stuff, and he caught the next flight home to Tampa. And a couple days later, he got a call from an FBI field agent. And he asked Hassan if he could stop by to answer a few more questions. Now, by this point, Hassan was hoping to put any doubt to rest, so he volunteered to take a series of polygraph tests. Hassan picks up the story from the TED stage.
One of the polygraph questions was, well, the first one was, is your name Hassan? Yes. Are we in Florida? Yes. Is today Tuesday? Yes. Because you have to base it on a yes or no. Then, of course, the next question is, do you belong to any groups that wish to harm the United States? I work at a university. You know? So I was like, well, you know, maybe you want to ask some of my colleagues that directly. But, you know, I said, okay, aside from what we had discussed, do you belong to any groups that wish to harm the United States? It's like, no. All right. So at the end of, after the end of 6 months of this and 9 consecutive polygraphs, they said, hey, everything's fine. I was like, I know, but that's what I've been trying to tell you guys all along. I know everything's fine. So they're looking at me, it's really odd. And it's like, guys, you know, I travel a lot. This is with the FBI. And I was like, you know, all we need is a last guy not to get the last memo, and here we go all over again. And there was a sincere concern there. I said, well, you know, if you get into trouble, give us a call. We'll take care of it. So ever since then, before I would go anywhere, I'd call the FBI. I'd tell them, hey, guys, this is where I'm going. This is my flight, okay? Northwest Flight 7 coming into Seattle on March 12th or whatever. You know, it wasn't that I had to, but I chose to. I just wanted to say, hey, guys, don't want to make it look like I'm making any sudden moves. I don't want you guys, you know, I don't want you guys to think that I'm about to flee. Just letting you know, heads up. And so I just kept doing this over and over and over. And then the phone calls turned to emails, and the emails got longer and longer and longer.
I mean, so like you had like your FBI agent, which by the way is insane. You had your own, it's like your own therapist. You had your own FBI, and he was on your speed dial on your cell phone.
Yeah, then I started realizing, well, wait a minute. Why is this guy so special? Why is it that only he gets to know everything?
Okay, so this is where it gets a little weird. Because if you go to Hassan's website, it will show you exactly where he is at this very moment. And also time-stamped photos of places he's been throughout the day.
This was the parking lot where I was trying to find a parking space this afternoon, right before I walked into here.
The meal he ate this morning, points along his commute.
At the light before I get on the main road, that's at work.
The toilet he used a few minutes ago.
By the way, you guys have great toilets here in the new building.
It's definitely nice toilets here. Hassan Elahi tracks himself. He turned his interrogation into a nonstop art project to tell the entire world where he is at any given moment. And he calls it tracking transients.
These are some of the airports that I hang out in, because I like airports. Kennedy Airport, May 19th, Tuesday. This is in Warsaw, Singapore. This is a parking lot in Elko, Nevada, at Koreana Supermarket, buying my kimchi, because I like kimchi.
But why would anyone want to give up their privacy voluntarily? Here's Hassan's explanation from his TED Talk.
When I first started this project, people were looking at me saying, why would you want to tell everybody what you're doing, where you're at? Why are you posting these photos? Well, this was before an age before people were tweeting everywhere and 750 million people were posting status messages or poking people. So in a way, I'm actually kind of glad that I'm completely obsolete. I mean, I'm still doing this project, but it really is obsolete because you're all doing it. This is something that we all are doing on a daily basis, whether we're aware of it or not. So we're creating our own archives and so on. The other thing that's also interesting that's going on here is the fact that intelligence agencies, and it doesn't matter who they are, they all operate in an industry where their commodity is information or restricted access to information. And the reason their information has any value is, well, because no one else has access to it. And by me cutting out the middleman and giving it straight to you, the information that the FBI has no value. So thus devaluing their currency. And I understand that on an individual level, it's purely symbolic. But if 300 million people in the US started doing this, we would have to redesign the entire intelligence system from the ground up. Because it just wouldn't work if everybody was sharing everything. And you know, and some of my friends have always said, hey, you're just paranoid. No one's, you know, well, why are you doing this? Because no one's really watching and no one's really going to bother you. So one of the things that I do is I actually look through my server logs very carefully. Because, you know, it's about surveillance. So I'm watching who's watching me. And I came up with these. So these are some of my sample logs. And I cleaned up the list a little bit so you can see that the Homeland Security likes to come by, Department of Homeland Security. You can see the National Security Agency likes to come by. I actually moved very close to them. I live like right down the street from them now. Central Intelligence Agency, Executive Office of the President. Not really sure why they show up, but they do. I think, you know, they kind of like to look at art. And I'm glad that we have patrons in the arts in these fields.
So, Hassan, what, like, say somebody like emails you and says, hey, let's hang out. I totally want to hang out. And you can't say, oh, I'm really sorry. I'm visiting people out of town today. Because all I have to do is go to the website and see that you are in Maryland.
Yeah.
At your house.
Yeah. Yeah.
So you can't, like, you can't do that.
No, it gets even weirder when you just don't post for several days. It's like, well, wait a minute. What happened?
What's going on?
What are you hiding?
Yeah.
Yeah. And we might say, look, I don't participate in this. I'm disconnecting. But that's not the case. That's not an option. Your water company knows what time you shower every day. And that's kind of creepy when you think about it. Bruce Schneier said a really interesting thing about Gmail reading your emails so it knows how to pop up those ads. And it's kind of like, well, it's like your dog looking at you naked. I mean, are you bothered by that?
But I mean, like, my dog doesn't have, like, a bionic eyeball that goes to the NSA.
Well, this is the thing, so...
Yeah, I don't have a dog, by the way.
But here's the thing.
A cat, yes.
I like cats.
Me too, I love cats. We have two. And they have seen me without clothes.
Does it feel weird?
No, because they're not sending that information to Google or to the NSA. It just stays in the cat.
I don't know. You know, I mean, I've changed my behavior around my cat. But, you know, but I think this is the beautiful thing is that, you know, now there are literally billions of people doing this. There's a billion people on Facebook alone. That is the third largest country in the world. That completely changes this perspective.
What does that say about privacy and about, like, whether it means anything?
It means something completely different than it meant. And the concepts and the technology are changing so quickly. But when it comes to regulating these things, that's when things get tricky. And I can't tell you whether it's for better or for worse, but I can certainly tell you that this idea of what we think of privacy today is going to be different.
I mean, I guess, like, we should expect that the idea of private things are just not really going to be private anymore, and that we should kind of surrender to it?
Well, maybe not. Maybe not necessarily in that same sense, because if you go back to, say, you know, 100, 200 years ago, maybe we don't even have to go that far back in time. Maybe there's plenty of places in the world right now where you go to that small village where everyone knows everyone's business. And essentially, we're kind of having a similar reverting to that.
Yeah.
But except now it's like billions of people.
We're back to the medieval village.
Yes.
Where the vicar knew like what everybody was doing.
Yes. Except now the vicar just happens to be the NSA.
Hassan Elahi, his web project is called Tracking Transience. Check out his talk at TED.com. On the show today, ideas around privacy, and we're just getting started.
There is a difference between the stuff that people put online themselves, like pictures and flights and meals they've eaten, than the stuff that they don't realize is also going into foreign computers.
Your Google searches, emails, big data, now possibly in the hands of governments and corporations? That could matter someday, even for the person who has nothing to hide today.
With today's technology, that information can be saved and stored for decades and then later used against him. Because you show me your Google history and I will find something embarrassing or incriminating from there in 5 minutes.
More secrets and privacy in a moment. I'm Guy Raz, and this is the TED Radio Hour from NPR.